It's almost summertime, and boy, is it starting to heat up. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Great to be back with you again, Barry. It's a nice day out, even though it's supposed to rain today. We're recording this on Thursday. We're supposed to get rain today, but I sat out this morning and we did an interview with Mike O'Reilly from WLRY doing our monthly. And it rained on me a little bit, and then the sun came out. So hopefully that's the kind of rain we get today.
Well, that may or may not be, but I'll tell you what, it is raining invective all over the place right
Boy,
now.
Boy, isn't it.
Things are heating up, Chuck. You're looking around, and there's an awful lot to talk about today, and I think we just need to get right into it. And I really want to start because this is something that's important to, I think, a lot of people. If you, as a listener, comment on a blog or on a website, you know, if you go down, like there's an article or something, and you write comments in the article, or you post something, or on your social media, if you have social media, if you do Facebook or any of the others, and if you post certain things up, well, you know what they say, Chuck, is that, you know, once you put something up online, it's there forever, right? Well, what happens if what you put up is made illegal? And that is the situation that we all, including yours truly here at the Principles and Policies program and on the Institute of Principle Policy website, may be facing in the near future. Unless, of course, an interesting coalition of organizations are successful in their lawsuit against the state of Ohio. Chuck, this just hit. As you know, I was looking at this before we went up this morning. This is coming out of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and it seems that the state legislature in Ohio back last year in April passed a law. And it took effect in August because the governor signed it, et cetera. And basically, this law was based on a situation that a representative found in their district was brought to them by a constituent. Now, you know, that's usually the way things are supposed to work. You know, you have a local problem in your area, and if it really needs a solution by changing the state law, that's part of a job of a representative. So, you know, I understand that this representative just believed they were doing their job. Now, the representative is Marlene Anielski, who is up in the Cleveland area, is a Republican member of the House of Representatives. And she brought this piece forward because a resident in her district by the name of Lori Siwick basically spent 2 years being stalked and harassed by a neighbor who went so far as to create a website that was specifically intended for harassment purposes, putting up false statements and information, things of that nature. I mean, I remember vaguely
reading
a little bit about this back when the bill was going through the legislature and didn't really think a whole lot about it because, you know, when this family tried to get the police to intervene, they were basically, well, there's nothing we can do about that. There's no provision. Well, Representative Anielski talked to her constituent and brought this bill forward. And the bill, of course, like many other well-intended things that happen with legislation, especially at the state level, and yes, we could also say the federal level, trying to address a single problem oftentimes creates bigger problems. That seems to be fairly true across the board. And this one's very much so true because the way this law was written, it says in part, and I'm going to quote this, "No person shall knowingly post a text or audio statement," that would be what we're doing right now, audio, "or an image on an internet website or web page for the purpose of abusing, threatening, or harassing another person." That's right there. And basically, a first-time violation of the law is a first-degree misdemeanor, which is the highest misdemeanor you can have. And I think subsequent offenses kick it up into the felony range. Well, Chuck, I mean, if you just sit there and listen to that statement of the what I call the money court of the of this particular law, that doesn't sound like it's too horrible. I mean, if you were just reading it for first glance, I mean, common sense would say, well, yeah, if somebody was going to put up a website, you know, and to say Barry Sheets is an idiot, well, I mean, you may disagree with what I say. You may disagree with how I think. Yeah. But, you know, unless you contextualize that, that's probably really abuse or harassment.
I think we better go out and buy that URL immediately.
Yeah, I better buy that URL right now, but now that I've given somebody the idea. And so, therefore, that, you know, on a common sense read, on first blush, this doesn't seem to be too far out there. But, you know, there's an old saying that if a law can be interpreted in a certain way, it's guaranteed it will be.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Okay. Right? And so a number of groups, including our friend Tom Zawistowski up at the Portage County Tea Party, and some of our listeners probably have heard of or know about Tom and the Portage County Tea Party and the Ohio Liberty Coalition and all of those groups who are the, I would say, conservative libertarian folks who have been out there. They worked really hard during this last election cycle, especially in the Trump campaign, et cetera. But they've been joined by a liberal blog site by the name of Plunderbund. Now, Chuck, you and I are familiar with Ohio's web world. Plunderbund is a very liberal blog site. They take shots all the time at conservatives.
Constantly,
the thing is that they both take shots at elected officials, and that's the reason why they're suing to get this law stopped. They're suing because they say that language that I just read is overly broad, and it would prohibit critical speech of public officials. And you know, as soon as I read that, I went back and read that money text. And I got it. That's exactly what this. I can see a party, you know, the Ohio Republican Party or the Ohio Democratic Party, or some public official like, you know, John Kasich, who is near and dear to our hearts, or at least in our invective sometimes, basically utilizing this law as a way to shut down criticism, similar to what Lyndon Baines Johnson did in 1954 by. And putting the 501c3 designation in the IRS code. Use it as a means to muzzle your political opponents. Because I think a great part of our, as people like to call it, democracy, but I like to call it constitutional Republican form of government, is that we have a First Amendment right to speech, and that includes political speech. And sometimes political speech isn't all puppies and kissing babies and glad-handing and, you know, tasting the pies at the county fair competition. Sometimes it's digging up dirt. It's finding out when a politician is saying one thing to one person and something else to somebody else and letting everybody know that they're two-faced, that they're waffling. You know, we would have been talking about the administration of President John Kerry probably at one point in time had not internet bloggers found out that he was basically flip-flopping on almost every position he ever took. And that really haunted him to the fact that he lost, you know, the presidential election against Bush.
Right.
So there is a legitimate place on the web for critical political speech. It's vital to the health of our republic because if we don't have that, we don't have the ability to be able to speak our beliefs. Now, again, Chuck, I know that we could point to, and many people went, well, look at all these abuses of people who are just out there, they're trolls, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the point is, that we're not talking about protecting trolls. We're talking about protecting folks, I mean, like Tom Z, who basically critique the actions of government and say that you guys are not doing the job that we sent you there to do. You know, there's a role for that. We have to, I mean, ultimately in our form of government, we the people are the final say, or supposed to be, in relation to where the buck stops. It stops with the people of the United States. That's part of the reason why we have a First Amendment, is to protect that right for people to have the right to assemble and to have for free speech and freedom of religion. And the free exercise, we have all of these rights, and we also have freedom of the press. The funny thing is, in this law, there was an exemption written in for media outlets. But, Chuck, are we considered a media outlet? Is the Institute or our radio show really considered a media outlet by the state standards?
Well, who knows?
Well, and honestly, the answer is no, because usually when they're talking about media outlets, they're talking about outlets that are basically part of an association like the Ohio Newspaper Association or the Ohio Legislative Correspondents Association, you know, ones who have quote unquote credentials.
Okay.
In other words, ones that have been legitimized by the government.
Here's the problem with that, Barry. When it comes to these kinds of things, you just simply redefine terms to make it mean what you want it to mean at any given time. That's the problem when you have laws like this, written in certain ways. They're generally written with terms that can be equivocated. That is redefined when they need to be. I'm going to give you an example of something that, one of the reasons why this law is awful. And there's a representative in Congress named Val Demings from Florida.
Yes, yes.
And you may know what I'm getting ready to talk about.
I do know what you're getting ready to talk about. Go ahead.
She basically has come out in favor of some gun control legislation. And while she was,
she's a former police chief.
She's a former police chief in Orlando. And while she was police chief, she left a gun in her car and it got stolen. She was given a written censure over that. So basically she had a gun stolen, but she has come out in favor of some gun control legislation. Apparently that means that everybody who should be allowed to have guns should no longer be allowed to have guns. This is the kind of nonsense that we get out of the Democratic Party today and a number of Republicans. So let's spread it around. But when a commenter asked Dennings if they ever found her stolen handgun and suggested that she be more responsible with her own firearms before talking about gun control for others, Demings offered a peculiar reply. This is from an article in the Daily Wire. Here's what she said. Teach me how to be perfect, Stephen, because obviously you are. My First Amendment right is different from yours. You are wasting your time. What does that mean, Barry? I can tell you what I'm pretty sure I think it means. I'm pretty sure I think it means that she believes that as an elected representative, you know, this becomes Orwellian. Everyone has the equal right to free speech, except the pigs, who have more right to free speech than the other animals. And if you're not familiar with what I'm talking about, go pick up a copy of Animal Farm by George Orwell. And what she was basically saying is that you don't get to comment on my stuff because I have a super right of free speech. Here's what the guy replied back. This is what's interesting. Your First Amendment rights are the same as mine. No one gets put on a pedestal. Same as my Second Amendment rights. Who are you to regulate more laws onto law-abiding citizens? We are regulated by background checks on the federal level on every purchase. My CCP background checked on a federal level, and yet I haven't irresponsibly left a gun someplace. It can get stolen. She has, of course, refused to clarify what it was that she meant by her First Amendment right is different. I can assure her that her First Amendment right is not different. It may be in practice, but by law, it's not.
Right. Well, and you know, it could have been a number of different reasons, Chuck. I mean, first of all, as a former police officer or police chief, that could be the first line of, well, my rights are different than yours because they have the ability to use force to ascertain what they want to do. Secondly, as a representative to Congress, that may have been the context that the representative was using because, well, remember, when they pass laws, oftentimes they don't apply to Congress. So in that sense, exactly, maybe that's what she thought her First Amendment rights were. Third is she's female. And so maybe she thinks that, and maybe it's a feminist thing, that because he's male and she's female, then she doesn't have the same rights as him. Because that you hear that refrain a lot in the feminist movement. And fourthly, she's African-American. And I don't know the other commentator what their ethnic background is or nationality. But, I mean, I can see a number of different silos where the representative could have parked this very misguided statement and actually honestly holds it to be true for them. And there we go again, because that's the other little piece of the rail that I wanted to hit on. What she's really saying is our rights are not absolute. And if our rights are not absolute and I have a different First Amendment right than you do because of my employment, position, gender or ethnic background, Chuck, we're going to live in a society that is completely untenable.
Well, what it becomes is an oligarchy. And by that, absolutely. I mean, there's a different set of, this is essentially why there's a United States of America, because when the people left Great Britain to come here and found a new society, and which is exactly what they did. They came to found a new society, and the reason they came to found a new society was shenanigans like this in England. Yes. And this is nothing new. I'm reading a book from the from the 15th century right now on the War of the Roses, which essentially was a big mess that happened during about 35 or 40 years in Britain. And if you read this thing, it's amazing. People essentially would come to petition the king, and because the king wouldn't receive the petition, they came in large numbers. People were given pardons and then later hunted down and beheaded in spite of the pardons. All kinds of strange things. Barry, it's just amazing to think about this idea of creating a two-tier society with, you know, leadership and people in government and with special privileges, and that includes the press. Let me read you a commentary on an article we're going to post from the Cleveland Plain Dealer, cleveland.com, and it was on this story that you started out with. This is why I read the comments. This is from someone named Chicago Lampoon. I wrote about a reporter in the pay of the Chicago Tribune who was opining on candidates, without mentioning that she was the PR person for Now. In print, she accused me of harassment for simply pointing out a salient fact. If Ohio Republicans pass this law, they are anti-constitutional buffoons, and Kasich has always been a buffoon. Oh, will I be prosecuted for writing this under the laws of the backward Ohio Yahoos? That kind of says it all, I'm pretty sure, because basically what this person has pointed out is what this the purpose of this law really is. It's to shut up. It's to stifle free speech. Now, here's someone who really needs to wake up and get a clue. I don't know what exactly. This is the kind of brainwashing that we see. Mr. Reasonable is this fellow's name. I'm surprised the GOP would pass a law like this or that Kasich would sign it. You are. This is my commentary. You are really surprised. I'm shocked at that, honestly. The language is so vague that it could cover anything. If I called Bruce Jenner Bruce, That could be enough to make me guilty of this law with a liberal judge. He gets it. Laws like this give away too much power to judges and prosecutors. Exactly. Now, there are other people who have said, you really are surprised that Kasich would sign this? And someone else who commented that the Republicans rarely meet a new criminal statute they don't desire to pass and enforce to the max. And honestly, I'd have to agree. It's amazing to me that people have their eyes this tightly shut.
Well, it doesn't really surprise me that much.
Well, yeah, I guess I'll have to backtrack that. Yeah, I guess I'm not surprised that much. This is how we got Kasich in the first place. And Barry, you and I can remember we were kind of lone voices crying out in the wilderness when he was running for his first term. Be careful, you. We're going to get this and this and this and this when we get John elected. No, you're not.
Not so much.
Yeah. You're not going to get anything that you think you're going to get, and you're going to get stuff you don't want. And were we right on that?
Mostly, yes.
Yeah, for the most part, yes.
You know, we're not batting 1,000, but you know, we're pretty close. Chuck, this gets right down to the fact that sometimes when lawmakers do things, they have unintended consequences, and I'm guessing. And giving the benefit of the doubt that when Representative Marlene Inyelski actually wanted to pass this bill, it was with the full intent and purpose of protecting her constituent from some other private individual who was basically finding a creative way of being a stalker and harassing the person. So I don't necessarily think that there was that the goal was any kind of suppression of free speech. Because, really, I don't have the free speech right to try to tear someone else down. I mean, I can do that, but I don't necessarily... I can't stand on my rights by, you know, if I go out and cuss somebody out in public. Well, it happens, but do I really have a right to do that? That's where the line gets a little gray. But if I go out and I criticize a public official... like online or on, let's say even at a town hall meeting, and then I get arrested for doing that, then I've lost my freedoms to speak. I've lost my freedoms to have a contrary opinion. And that's what these groups are, and their attorneys. And I think it's interesting to point out this suit, one of the lead attorneys on this lawsuit against the state is nationally known, probably internationally known law professor and blogger Eugene Volokh, who yep. writes at the blog The Volokh Conspiracy.
Yep.
I don't know if you've ever read that, Chuck, but it's a fascinating blog.
It is a very fascinating blog.
This guy's really, really, really good, and he sharpens the axe every once in a while and takes it to the root of politics and of politicians. And so I get it from their point of view. I mean, this isn't just an... It's funny that the ACLU isn't involved in this because, frankly, this is a situation where the interpretation of what the representative may have intended is probably not going to look exactly like the intent. I can see very clearly, you know, groups running to political groups running to their favorite courts, i.e. that's called venue shopping. To get a judge who will agree that, well, the party, you know, should never be criticized. I mean, during the time this last cycle when people far and wide were criticizing the former executive director of the Ohio Republican Party, Matt Borges, you know, this law, it could have been used to say, well, you're harassing me and you're doing it with the intent, you know, of abusing or threatening or harassing me. Is it in the eye of the beholder? I mean, that's what it gets down to. When does it, and I don't think a bill, I don't think a statute can be surgical enough to cut across the lines to figure out when, you know, when do you cross the line between criticism and abuse?
Well, that's a great question. And in fact, that's what libel and slander laws are for.
Exactly. Thank you. Which means if we have libel and slander laws on the books, why do we need this? I mean, because, I mean, yes, could my neighbor go ahead and buy that URL and start posting up nasty things about me? And, you know, yeah, they could. Would it be potentially damaging or hurtful to my professional life or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Maybe, maybe not. Depends on how I choose to handle it, I think. Because ultimately, Chuck, unlike what most people want to believe, unless you've got your URL is drudgereport.com or something of that nature, there aren't too many people who read blog sites, who read all these blog sites. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of blog sites and websites. I mean, there's millions and millions and millions of websites out there. Truthfully, Chuck, do you think you've looked through all the websites that are out there?
Me?
Of course. Yeah. And I'm talking on the regular internet. I'm not talking like dark web stuff. I'm talking about the regular stuff.
You mean in all my
There's no way.
Yeah, in all my spare time? Yeah, I don't think so.
Unless you're going looking for it, you're never going to find it, which means that probably this constituent of Representative Minelski's, this Lori Siwek, it was only probably her neighbor, and the small universe that her neighbor may have sent the stuff out to in order to try to embarrass her. And who knows what it was. I don't remember the exact particulars. But when it gets right down to it, they have to ask the question, and it should have been asked a long time ago, does this really raise to the level of needing to change the state law?
Well, okay, first of all, I just put on the list of links to be posted. Something from the Volokh conspiracy website, which, by the way, now it used to be that Eugene Volokh had his own website. It's now posted under the WashingtonPost.com. So, and it says it's the official Eugene Volokh website. That being the case, they have a direct link to this particular story, and Volokh talks about gives a little more detail on. So, if you want a little more detail on what this is all about, you can go to that. We'll post the link when we post this particular thing online, this particular broadcast.
Sure.
It's basically under the Volokh conspiracy. Volokh is how you spell it. Volokh. And you can find that before we post it, or you can wait and do it the easy way and just click on our website, www.principledpolicy.com. I think this is an important thing. We need to get the word out. This law needs to be simply, I don't think this is fixable. I think this thing has to be repealed.
Yeah, I do believe it. I mean, I feel for the family who underwent the harassment and stalking. I mean, I went back and took a quick look. Yeah, some of the things that were happening was, you know, the person creates this website and then puts a Photoshop picture of her and her husband on the website hanging, you know, with a noose around their neck. And that right there should have raised to the level of a potential criminal threat.
I'm
filling their fax machine up with hundreds and hundreds of dummy faxes, that kind of thing.
I'm no attorney, but if I remember right, that kind of thing constitutes assault.
Yeah, it constitutes assault. And so for the cops to basically say they can do nothing about it maybe is more of an indictment of the laissez-faire attitude in some police departments than it is the screaming need for a state law that basically will block vast majority of people from being able to be critical of their government. So, you know, yeah, we need to rethink it. I'm looking forward to seeing this lawsuit, come out that the language, you know, maybe they rescind it or it gets changed. We get it narrowed down, or we start, you know, utilizing this as a crutch of saying, you know, we already have these other laws on the books, start enforcing them. And then we won't have these type of situations. But anyhow, you know, there's another thing that, you know, I could see many in federal government wanting to use a similar type of piece of legislation to basically shut down their critics. And that seems to be, they're doing it without legislation, Chuck. I mean, we're going to roll over to the federal level right now because, boy, talk about getting hot. It's very hot in D.C. right now. I mean, there's the words impeachment and collusion and everything else are flying through the air because the president decided to do something that he probably should have done a long time ago. And, of course, it would have all been flying in the air then, too, probably almost as much. But, you know, he fired the director of the FBI, James Comey, back a week or two ago. And, of course, now all these things are coming out that, well, you know, there was this thing and that Trump had requested Comey, you know, shut down an investigation into, and I believe it was General Michael Flynn's involvement with foreign governments, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there was an awful lot of smoke and vitriol. And supposedly a lot of this came out of a dinner that Trump and Comey had together. But the question is, who else was there? Because the ones who were there, I believe it was the Secretary of State, National Security Advisor, et cetera, all say nothing of that nature ever was discussed. But Comey's now saying he's got a memo that, you know, he'd put together about this. And that has gotten the mainstream media like sharks with blood in the water. Everything from the Washington Post to the New York Times, I've almost started printing twice a day now. No, I'm just joking about that.
That's the old days.
They might want to fire up an evening edition every once in a while now here, too, just to keep up with the amount of spin that they're putting out there over all of this. I mean, you're hearing the allusions to Watergate coming back up again. And, you know, oh, we haven't seen it. This is as bad as Watergate. And it's like, no, guys, you don't understand.
Oh, no.
The Watergate issue, there were already people who were in jail when it finally came up to the fact that there was credible evidence that the president had actually directed or had given the okay for criminal acts to be done. Okay? That's the level Watergate was at. I mean, this doesn't even, honestly, I'm just laughing at this because it is just screamingly desperate by the left and by establishment Republicans that we don't want to be under the yoke of this nationalist, changing the order of business guy, Donald Trump, any longer than we have to be. We want to get back to normal, which is back to the pay-to-play, K Street controls the agenda, we do everything for our big money donors, and then we con the American people into believing it's good for them.
Explain that K Street. Some people, that's a little jargony.
Where all the big special interest groups have their offices, the lobbying interests, and that's both national and international. It's a street in Washington, D.C., where basically almost every other address is a law firm or a lobbying outfit that handles the big boys. And I mean, I'm talking like the major energy users and pharmaceutical companies and insurance giants and car manufacturers and you name it, they got a lobby over on K Street. It's like the place to be if you're in the Washington, D.C. lobbying community. If you're on K Street, you're considered one of the elite.
And boy, it's
fancy. Now, if you're in a
fancy
K car, like some of us are, not so much.
And it's fancy on K Street. It's not the low rent district in D.C.
No, not at all. But anyhow, so you've got this situation where, you know, now you've got people, including some Republicans and some who would be considered more conservative libertarian Republicans, now all saying, oh, well, maybe we should think about this. You know, maybe this is rising to the level of impeachment. And I think it's hilarious because one of the key people who's crying about this is a representative who otherwise a lot of people, especially up to a point, Trump supporters thought was a great guy, Representative Justin Amash from Michigan. Now, Amash has become the first Republican to come out and really raise the question or make the statement that, you know, if the Comey memos turn out to be true, then Trump probably can be impeached. So, in other words, he's trying to lay the groundwork. Now, why would a libertarian slash conservative Republican like Amash, whose base oftentimes looks identical to Trump's base, want to come out and do that, Chuck? I mean, what do you think the driving force was behind just an Amash deciding above Paul Ryan, above John McCain? You know, you look at John McCain, Lindsey Graham, all the other people in the Republican circles who are major Trump detractors. Not a single one of them said anything about this, but Justin Amash did. What do you think?
Well, I already know what the answer is, so I'm going to let you answer to be nice, to not steal your thunder.
Justin Amash is coming out and saying this because it's political survival for him. And I say that because he thinks that the wave is turning, and if the wave is turning, he wants to be out in front of it. But he's also got some personal reasons for that. Because if you remember back during the health care debate, but not the HCA passage, but the first iteration that they brought up, they were going to bring to a vote, and then they had to cancel the vote. If you remember, Trump's team and Trump himself were upset with the House Freedom Caucus. And Trump had tweeted out or made some statements about going after members of the House Freedom Caucus. And what he meant by that was electorally, by helping to encourage primaries against them. Who was the person he said he was going to target first? Yes, that's right. Justin Amash. Justin Amash is coming out and saying that, well, if this is true, then Trump's, you know, we can impeach him. This is payback, Chuck. This is payback. Trump supposedly threatened him with a primary, and so he's going to threaten Trump with bringing articles of impeachment. Now, he didn't say he's going to bring the articles, but even coming out there and leading with that is a hint, political hint. You know, that's what you call the dark arts of politics, is saying something to let somebody else know something else that you're actually saying, which is, I'm ready to bring articles of impeachment against you. Amash has got a little problem there now, doesn't he, Chuck? And that's a little problem called the facts. Not the facts of what Comey is saying in the memo, whether or not those are true. I mean, and Comey's got himself a little bit of a problem, doesn't he?
Oh, Comey has a major problem. He has a couple of major problems that he's essentially dug his own hole, and now he's got one foot in it.
Exactly. And the reason why is because now, after he got fired, he's now saying that this conversation took place where he was asked to basically cease and desist on an investigation of, I think it was Flynn, by Trump directly, which would be interfering with a ongoing investigation and trying to use the power of your office to shut down an investigation, which is really, honestly, Chuck, a bad thing to do. I mean, it's something that rises to the level of, like, complete lack of trust and utilizing your, and that's why they're talking about collusion. You know, that's they're trying to raise that. That's a low standard, but they're trying to raise that Trump was trying to force Comey not to do this investigation because he was trying to protect one of his inner circle who was in it deep and could implicate other people. You know, that there's all that going on. But the big problem is Comey says this after he gets fired, but before he got fired, as a matter of fact, on the day of the reason why Trump said he fired him, Comey went to Capitol Hill and he testified in front of, I believe it was the House Government Oversight Committee. And this was on May the 3rd. And, of course, they swear him in. He's under oath. And he got asked a question. And he basically got asked the question of whether or not he'd ever been asked to stop investigating someone for a political reason. Comey's response under oath was, quote, "It's not happened in my experience," unquote. So, Chuck, he's in front of Congress, he's under oath, and he's just testified on May the 3rd that it didn't happen, that he's never had that happen to him.
Yeah, May the 3rd. This is now
May the 3rd. Now,
15 days ago.
May the 5th, 4th or 5th, that Trump fired. So between May the 5th and May the, what is, today's the 18th.
Yeah, 13 days.
All of a sudden, Comey's got this memo that he says he's kept because he keeps all these great notes of all these conversations, where he's basically said in the memo that's exactly what had transpired. So the question is, if the memo's true, then he lied under oath. And if he didn't lie under oath, he's falsified a memo. James Comey is in deep, deep, deep trouble.
Yeah.
Deep trouble. Justin Amash, I don't think, is politically savvy enough to figure that out. And he went out there and he stepped out on the edge of that little thin branch and start saying, yeah, well, you know, if that memo is true, then yeah, we probably should impeach Trump.
Okay, I'm going to disagree with you. He's not politically savvy enough to realize that. He's been told, don't worry, we have your back. And I'll tell you who's
told. Oh, I'm sure. Well, and again, that's being not politically savvy either.
Here's who's told it to him. It's GOP insiders and it's far-left Democrats.
Yeah.
That's who's told it. It's a cabal, ladies and gentlemen. Now, if you poke around on some commentary, you'll see Democrats and Republicans together fighting for the same ideologically questionable things. You'll see that called the Uniparty. Well, what is the Uniparty built around? What is the cornerstone that the Uniparty, or the Democrats and Republicans working for the same ideologically questionable things, what is it about? Well, it's about globalism. What you're seeing here is the outcropping of globalists like John McCain, like Mitch McConnell, like Orrin Hatch.
Yeah.
You're going to see these guys come out, and they're never Trumpers. They're people who didn't want Donald Trump in the office and would do anything they could think of to get him out. Now, why would they do this? Why would they want to get rid of him? Well, Trump is not a good, solid globalist. Trump is a nationalist in many of his ways of his worldview, if you will. Trump doesn't have any problem with global markets and that kind of thing. Anybody who has a problem with global markets doesn't understand how the world has worked since ships were invented and since camels carried goods across the entire Middle East into the from Europe into the Indian subcontinent and into China. I mean, the global market's been here since, time immemorial. If you can't point to a time when there weren't, the global market didn't exist. What maybe wasn't as big as it is now because it's so easy to transport things these days. But the fact is, this is not about global market. This is about global governance. And Trump is not a global governance guy. And you want to know why? Because he's a businessman. And most That's businessmen right. understand that global governance is bad for business. Flat out.
That's right.
Not only that, it's bad for liberty. Because basically what global governance people want to have happen is they want people sitting in Indonesia. They want people sitting in Gambia. People sitting in Zimbabwe. People sitting in Paraguay to decide whether you get to own a gun or not, whether you can drink a pop of a certain size or not. If you want you want some 96 ounce sugar laden monstrosity, that is your taste. That is what you want. Well, under global governance, well, somebody in Paraguay says it's not fair that you would have that. Therefore, you can't have it. They would also say there might be a cap on your income because, after all, we need to share the money globally. This is what guys like John McCain, like Mitch McConnell, like Orrin Hatch, Name a senator. Rob Portman from Ohio.
Yes.
And of course, let's not leave out Sherrod Brown, because, but I'll be quite honest, in most cases, being Democrat is a given that they're a globalist. Republicans make the claim, oh, no, 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 we're not for that, we're not for that. No, they're for a different form of it. Leftward-leaning globalists are more Marxist. Rightward-leaning globalists are more fascist. And both of those folks, I'm talking about economic systems. That's what's going on here. And right now, they see a way to get in Mike Pence. They see a way possibly to remove Donald Trump and put in Mike Pence, who is kind of a blank slate. I think he's a tabula rasa that they're pretty sure they can write on. Tabula rasa. A blank slate that can be written on. In other words, Mike Pence will do what he's told. That's where
That may well be the case. Now, they're all screaming about this, and of course, I think the Comey memo thing is going to end up blowing up in Comey's face rather than in the Trump administration's face. But the other side of that coin is something that the Democrats, and we've talked about this on the program before, the Democrats have been screaming for, and that is a deeper investigation into the Trump team's ties with Russia and whether Russia influenced the election to get Trump in. And, of course, that was something that, Comey was, in doing as well. That kind of got set to the side for a little while. But now it's back up. And, of course, with the firing of James Comey, you had a number of the globalist, liberal, Democrat and Republicans, yelling for this investigation. And so the basically director in charge of the FBI right now, who's the deputy attorney general, Rod Rosenstein, he's the deputy under Jeff Sessions. The Justice Department has appointed a special investigator, a special prosecutor, by the name of Robert Mueller. And that name should be very familiar to people because, funny thing is, Robert Mueller was, before James Comey, the director of the FBI for 10 years. He started in the Bush administration and went on into the Obama administration. And that's kind of the way FBI directors set up. It's a 10-year gig, so that it actually crosses over administrations. I think it's very interesting because that way you try to limit the amount of politicization of the office. And so Mueller was named just recently to basically continue the probe in the Russian collusion. And people across the board are saying, that's probably a really good thing. Mueller's got a lot of credibility and respect. He's considered no nonsense. And that he, that they can get to the bottom of this and get this thing settled once and for all, one way or the other. And honestly, Chuck, I mean, unless the Kremlin was actually pushing the buttons for the votes, I'm not sure to what extent the Russian interference in the elections is going to pan out to be anything other than a drop in a bucket. I mean, were they going to influence it? Did they illegally buy airtime? Did they sabotage voting machines? What are we trying to get to here? Are we just trying to get to the fact that we want to make Russia the boogeyman, and if we can say that these guys were friendly with each other, then we'll paint enough suspicion that we then can basically try to shut down this administration's ability to have a policy agenda?
Well, if you'll recall how this really started, this started as a meme really, really late in the campaign when it was becoming obvious to the Democratic Party and they weren't telling anybody that they were going to lose. And what it started with was the idea that the WikiLeaks release of John Podesta's emails, that this was performed by Russian intelligence. And that's who gave Julian Assange and WikiLeaks the information. And if you'll recall, Julian Assange laughed at that. He said, he goes, a 12-year-old hacker could have hacked into John Podesta's emails. his password was password. You know, this was a thing. First of all, it's looking like somebody in the intelligence community. And if you'll recall, there is information floating out there now, and I'm not going to report this as anything like fact because I don't know if it is or not. It's unconfirmed. But that the DNC staffer that was killed early on in the campaign in the summer, this fellow whose name escapes me at the moment, who was simply shot in the back of the head. He wasn't robbed. He was coming out of a bar. He was going home, and somebody came up behind him and shot him in the back of the head, and he died right there on the sidewalk, and nothing else was done. The shooter simply disappeared. In gun-controlled Washington, D.C. What a shock. Now there's stories floating around that he had coughed up 44,000 emails to WikiLeaks. That he may have been the source of the WikiLeak. And, of course, his family is going apoplectic because they're Democratic Party operatives, and they don't like the idea that their son may have done this. They're demanding proof, and from my perspective, yeah, I would demand proof as well. But if there is proof, and they won't dig it out because it's buried deep in the intelligence community. And let me tell you something, Barry, the intelligence community is never Trump. They want him gone. Why? Because they are themselves a globalist operation. That this is what is meant by drain the swamp. He needs to completely change over the staff in the intelligence agencies if he's got a chance to fix anything. He's really, really, really got to drain the swamp. And if you'll recall, we talked about the fact that draining the swamp is not as easy as it sounds. And that's because these people are entrenched in agencies and the groups like the CIA, the National Security Agency, these are so secret in their operations that you don't even know where to start, because in many cases you don't even know who works there. Even at Trump's level, in many cases he can't get at that stuff. They're almost an entity unto themselves. This is a scary time for us to live in, because these guys are influenced. I'm more worried about people inside our government, inside our intelligence community, having some influence that's dangerous, rather than the Russians, who are painfully obvious in some of their intelligence gathering. They're, in many ways, they're not that good at it. I'll give you a quick example just as it bears nothing having to do with fact. You ever watch a James Bond movie? I'm sure you've seen James Bond movies.
Yeah.
James absolutely. Bond would be the worst spy in the world. Why would he be the worst spy in the world? Everybody knows who he is. The audience knows who he is.
Yeah.
The people on the other side know who he is. Everybody knows who he is.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm always sort of like, he shows up in these undercover things. I'm like, everybody knows who he is. How can nobody know who James Bond is? You're going to make me talk? No, Mr. Bond, I intend to make you die. You know, those kinds of things. Everybody knows who he is. All the bad players. So... this is the kind of the Russian intelligence thing. Now, does Russia have tentacles out all over the place? Yeah. Are they a little more connected in places like the Middle East than we are? Yeah. You know why? Because they share borders. That's like saying Russians have more influence in Mexico than we do. No, they don't. We have a lot of influence in Mexico and Canada and Guatemala and Belize and all these little Central American countries, because we share borders or are in close proximity to them. They have an advantage over us in places like Europe, in places like Asia. Yes, they have an advantage because they share borders with them. This is why we need to think more deeply about some of these things. And we need to see why all these people from a specific perspective are coming out and trying to assassinate Trump and his character.
Well, absolutely. And honestly, it just all gets down to politics, Chuck.
Of course.
Really,
what
it gets down to is who's going to have control? And is that control going to be centered in we the people, or is it going to be centered in the special interests and the global agenda? I mean, that's really where we get down to. So, you know, let's not kid ourselves. Love him, hate him, like his policies, hate his policies. Donald Trump represents a major threat to the agenda of the globalist big government, unification theory of governance. You see it all the time where they are basically just wringing their hands over the fact that this guy is the president of the United States.
And that drives them insane.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it drives the press insane. Why is it driving the press insane? They did everything they could to make sure that Hillary got elected, and she didn't get elected. So now they're doing anything they can to run him out. The fact is that there's so much fake news floating around out there. I mean, New York Times is releasing all these things and stating as fact things that they have from quote-unquote anonymous sources inside the White House. Are there a lot of leakers in the White House? Yeah, but you know what there are still in the White House? A lot of former Obama staff members. Trump really needs to go in and do a complete sweep. Just get rid of people.
Yes.
And one of the things, you know, that if you recall, one of the greatest fake news stories I think I can remember was the fact, do you remember when the report was that the press secretary, Sean Spicer, was hiding in the bushes? He was hiding in the bushes when one of these big stories, he didn't want anything to do with it. He was missing in action. What was Sean Spicer doing while he was supposedly missing in action? Do you remember what he was doing, or have you heard?
No, I don't remember.
Okay, he was doing his Naval Reserve duty.
Oh, okay. Well, gee, we can't have that.
You can't have a press secretary going out and actually serving his country with the Navy Department, the Navy and the War Department when there's these important stories. So what happens? They brought in Sarah, I don't know her, Mike Huckabee's daughter, who's the deputy press secretary.
Right.
And she continued the tradition of abusing the press. Well, the press deserve to be abused because they've been abusive for virtually their entire careers. When a Republican's in office or when a conservative is involved, they are outright abusive. They will make up fake stories. They'll invent anonymous sources. I have no trouble believing this at all. So many of these stories that came out early in the Trump administration, turned out to be just complete fictions, bearing no resemblance to anything that actually happened. And yet everybody continues to go on and believe them when they come out and say that Trump revealed top secrets when the Russians were in the office. Well, he didn't do any such thing. You know, some of the stuff was absurd. It was on airplane safety. Huh? I mean, really, we're trying to hide airplanes, how we deal with airplane safety from the Russians? Why would we do that? If we're both involved in fighting terrorism, fighting the terrorists, why wouldn't we give them some of the things they need to do the same thing? You don't think the terrorists are trying to get at Russia? You bet they are. Because Islam knows no economic ideology differences. What they know is they would like to spread the boundaries of Islam and I'm talking about radical Islam. I'm not talking about necessarily more simple religious Islam. Sure, they would like to spread the faith. Well, Barry, that being said, we're out of time.
I figured we would be.
You were right. You know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.